At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Well, good evening, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of Future Sox Podcast Hot Takes and Heaters. My name is Danny Miller. Sitting next to me, gracing the airwaves this evening, is my esteemed co-host and partner, Jacob Thom. And tonight is Wednesday, August 20th. The White Sox are currently in a heated battle, a mostly boring game, actually, if you're one of those people who likes a lot of offense. But I am one of enjoying a pitcher's duel as well. But yeah, man, White Sox have kind of fallen off a little bit here after a hot surge after the All-Star break, and have dropped a handful of series here. And we're looking at hopefully taking one from the Braves this evening as the last couple innings play out here, down 1-0. But we'll stay on it, and we'll keep an eye on it for you during the show here. But without further ado, let's kick this thing off, man. How you doing this week, Jacob?
We're hanging in there. It's cooler, finally. It's not 150 degrees. I think I make a comment every time I come on here about the weather, but it affects me very much. So, yeah, glad it's not hot, and we're hanging in there.
Yeah, I agree. I can actually go outside and barbecue and not feel like, you know, I'm in the 37th level of hell. So,
yeah,
you know what it is. Good evening, Uncle Ted. Uncle Ted checking in right off the bat here, talking about Waldrop being a monster, and he has been absolutely spectacular this evening. He's got the White Sox absolutely befuddled at the plate. So we're gonna hope that they can get to the bullpen here in a 1-0 trailing 1-0 in the bottom of the eighth. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, man. Definitely been cooled off here a lot, like the White Sox. Although, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what's been going on this evening. Obviously, the White Sox, for a while there in some of those other series, the offense wasn't exactly as hot as it had been. But, man, this series, there was 44 runs scored between the two teams in just the first two games. Right.
Yeah.
Monday night, the White Sox come out and put up a 13 spot. And in the last couple of innings, now, you know, you win a game 13-9. I normally wouldn't say it was an eker of a win, but they eked that one out, man, because they had a handy lead and let the Braves kind of chip away into that. And you almost wondering if the White Sox were going to find a way to get out of that game. And fortunately for the Sox, they did. But then last night's game, you know, the White Sox go up with a couple run or with a 1 or 2 run lead early in the game. They let the Braves back in it. And then as late as the seventh inning, the White Sox were up 10-4, looking like they were going to be in cruise control. And then they end up dropping one, 11-10. So it's not as though the offense is falling apart now. We're having some bullpen issues, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that tonight. We'll get into that later, but I was just kind of Just kind of pointing out the juxtaposition of what the last two games looked like in comparison to tonight's game with, like I said, it's a 1-0 in the bottom of the eighth. So, Jacob, talking about pitching performances, what do you see from the starting rotation the last couple of nights?
Yeah, I mean, it's been different, right? I mean, they moved Cannon and Burke to Charlotte. Clearly trying to switch some things up. Martin Perez heads back into the rotation. Absolutely shoved tonight. Only gave up one earned. Gave up one run, not earned.
Unearned, yeah.
And then you add in Yoandris Gomez, kind of this guy who was just, they picked him off the trash heap. He was on his third team this year, and he's looked good in two starts. And then Shane Smith's pitching really well again. Kind of looking back to that all-star form. Did give up four, but that kind of all fell apart there. In the sixth inning, the five innings before that were really strong. And so you add that to, you know, Savali and Davis Martin. And, you know, it's an interesting rotation. And I think going forward, you know, we'll kind of see, we'll talk about September call-ups later in this video, if potentially there's a change there. But, yeah, not the rotation that you would have thought of in the beginning of the year at this moment, but kind of an interestingly okay rotation, I think.
Yeah, there have definitely been some shocks, especially in the last week here or so with some moves made. One of the big things that I think is on a lot of people's minds, and we'll talk about a little bit tonight, is the fact that, you know, maybe there's been some injuries, right? There's been some movement because guys are a little bit banged up. You know, the White Sox were pitching a four-man rotation for in the neighborhood of 2 weeks, right? With that being said, and what we saw the last couple nights, giving up a bunch of runs late in the game to let the Braves back in the first game and, you know, eventually let them win the second game last night of this series so far. I wanted your thoughts on what you thought was happening. Is it injuries that are playing a part with the bullpen? Is it overuse because of the bullpen games with only going with the four-man rotation? Let me hear your thoughts on that. And, you know, hopefully the chat will chime in, because I know there's a lot of folks out there that have had some different opinions on this. And, you know, if you're like me, I don't post much on the socials, but I definitely I'm a troll. Let's say that. So, you know, I'll scroll and not really chime in, because most of the time I don't have anything savory to say to most of these folks. So I just kind of leave it at that. But let's hear your thoughts on what it is you think is going on, or, you know, give us a couple of different angles, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at it, like, if you look at the underlying numbers with the bullpen, I mean, it's not pretty. Like, if you really dig deep on Savant, like, you know, Altavilla's hasn't been as lucky as he should, or has been luckier than he should. There's a lot of guys who, you know, their expected ERAs are in the fives. And so maybe that comes back to bite him. Like, Steven Wilson, I think, is one of those guys who, like, is maybe getting a little lucky this year. Unfortunately, I think these back-to-back days, I think, you know, they've just gotten unlucky. It just, you know, sometimes you just can't get outs, and that has happened. But, you know, going back to, like, you know, is it being overworked? Like, maybe. I mean, they had two guys in Cannon and Burke who, you know, couldn't go very late into games. Cannon could, I mean, they can. I mean, they're starting pitchers. They can. They just weren't throwing well enough to get into, you know, later stages of the games. You know, so you kind of miss Adrian Hauser in that role when he was giving you 5-6 quality innings. You know, and as you mentioned, they go to a, you know, four-man rotation, which means a bullpen day. And yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of innings for these guys. I think it's a combination of everything, really, though. I mean, we'll see what it kind of comes up with going forward. But yeah, it's been a rough two games for them, but overall, I think a solid unit since the All-Star break.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, the thing is the bullpen, we talked about it early in the season where, you know, I'll never forget, to be honest with you, the way things started out, I think it was like the first month and a half of the season, you and I were talking about how we expected the bullpen to continually be shuffled. And then, I don't know, about mid-June or so, things seemed to kind of find a plateau as far as movement went. The moves were coming less often, you know, outside of maybe somebody going through a little injury here and there. The White Sox kind of settled in on the names and the guys they were going to have throwing out of the bullpen. It almost even seemed like some guys maybe had a role, even if the team wasn't going to define it. You know, and the bullpen actually became a strength for this ball club, right? You know, something that in years past seemed like it could be, and there were spots during season, you know, last year and in season, the season before, where it seemed like there could be strong points. And then they had these like just major blow up moments, kind of what we're witnessing now, but you know, extended periods. Whereas this team was different. Once they settled in, they found a place for these guys, and they found a groove and a rhythm, and really became one of the strengths of the team. So when we go back and we look at, you know, what the record could have been like had the team been scoring a little bit of runs and given these pitchers some run support, because, you know, we talked about it with, you know, a couple months ago, where if you look at the White Sox record, and we weren't the only ones talking about it, with how many games were being won by one, or lost, I should say, by one or two runs, they were at the top of the league in that number. So they were in games more often than not. And a lot of that had to do with the bullpen, but the offense wasn't there. Starting pitching was looking pretty good, you know, at that time. Now we've kind of gone through this flip almost where the offense is absolutely lights out, but when you make some moves at the trade deadline, that thins out your starting rotation a little bit, and you go through, like you said, these growing pains with Burke and Cannon, which, oof, I mean, I don't know, you know, I wish all the best of luck to Jonathan Cannon, but I just, there's just something there that doesn't seem like he's got himself in the right place right now. I don't know if the Sox are going to find it, but he just looks overmatched every time he goes out and throws. He's having some pretty big command issues as well. So, but when these things all kind of happen that way, it's really strange as a White Sox fan to go, I mean, they completely flipped the script in basically a 2-week period where you go from one thing to the next. And it's like, if one's working, the other one's not, right? You got offense working, pitching's not. When the pitching's working, the offense wasn't earlier on. It's just really tough to put a finger on it. But I wanted to ask you, is there anybody in the organization right now that you would like to see in the rotation as a starter here coming up shortly? Is there anybody in the starting rotation that you would replace maybe even, or give a break to for a little while and move some guys around?
Yeah, I mean, I think a name to watch, and we've talked about it, is Tanner McDougal down in Birmingham. He's now a top 10 prospect in the system. He's absolutely carving guys. I mean, he's an experienced prospect too. You know, still only 22 though. I mean, he's been in the system for a while. So only in Birmingham, we'll see if he gets the call. But, you know, looking at Charlotte, it's an interesting, you know, kind of catch 22 of, you know, you have some guys in there like Clevinger, some other vets. You have the two guys you acquired for Adrian Hauser. You know, you have some other guys in there as well. And obviously there's a big name in Noah Schultz in Charlotte, but I wouldn't expect to see him up this year, not with his struggles. And so, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see if they add to that rotation, or if they do kind of something like they did last year of taking starters and putting them in the bullpen from Charlotte, right? We saw that with Iroh Uriarte. You know, he was a starter in Charlotte, came in, was a bullpen piece. Sean Burke, same thing. And I'll be interested to see if they actually bring Sean Burke back to be a reliever and fill a kind of a long relief role. But Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens coming forward. But yeah, I don't. And then going for, you know, and you brought up, you know, rotation guys into the bullpen. You know, I'd be interested to see what like a Davis Martin looks like. You know, honestly, Yoandris Gomez, I think has some interest there. Just kind of with the stuff he contains, you know, it's a weird spot for the White Sox right now because of all the Tommy John injuries and the guys, you know, you have coming back next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've talked about that like all year, but like, Drew Thorpe's going to be back next year. Like, he's kind of a pencil into the rotation right now. You know, there's some other guys there, like Prelander Roa, who was thought to be the closer coming into this one this year. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to have an interesting decision to make next year. More guys are going to have Tommy John. Like, that's just how the MLB operates at this point. You know, you never want to see it, but it's going to happen. So, the pitching staff in general is in an interesting place for the rest of the year and then going forward.
Yeah, I want to touch on Tanner McDougal a little bit because you did mention that he is only in Birmingham, although he is pitching very well in Birmingham. There's a couple of things that I lean one way with him, then I lean the other way with him, and I have a conundrum about where I'm at on my thoughts with him, because I honestly feel like he could be a weapon at the major league level. But the problem that I see with him, and by the way, let me back that train up. I don't have an issue with skipping Charlotte with him either. Truist is a bandbox, and I almost feel like a lot of pitchers can be protected by not actually pitching half of their games in that park. It's very, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's like it just slipped out of my brain, but it's one of those places where it could be demeaning to pitch there. And yet it could mean absolutely nothing when those numbers come up bad. You know, it's one of those things where it's going to be difficult to convince a pitcher that it's not his fault. It's a lot of guys just are going to get in their own head when they've got a 6 ERA there and they feel like they're a much better pitcher than that. And it's because that place is a bandbox. The ball just flies out of the ballpark, and there's, you know, it's where hitters go to hit, right? And I think you can protect a guy from that and move him straight into the MLB level where, you know, maybe the quality of hitter is going to be far and above what you've faced before, but your confidence isn't absolutely destroyed. The other side of that coin is they've kind of had him on a – you know, he's getting his 3 innings a week, which they're doing that with a handful of pitchers right now. So does that really help the MLB ball club at this point to bring another guy in who's only getting a handful of innings? And, you know, they got the training wheels on some of these pitchers. And, you know, the thing is, I'm not sure. I felt like the training wheels would come off at some point. I thought maybe they're saving these guys for, like, playoffs in their respective leagues down in the minors, because we're looking at a couple of teams that could potentially make the playoffs down there. I don't know. Well, at least one anyway. I don't really get it. I thought that, like I said, the training wheels would come off some of these guys once they're, you know, feel like they're stretched out a little bit at this point. Maybe they let them go and get some more innings. We're not really seeing it. And I wanted to kind of, you know, do you have any thoughts on that? Do you feel like they're being overly cautious with some of these guys? Are we expecting to see some of these guys pitching in the fall leagues, in the winter leagues? Like, what are your thoughts on how the White Sox are babying some of these arms and what it's doing to the Major League ball club and the rotation here and the bullpen arms that are being overworked?
Yeah. First off, shout out to Trey, who just hopped in the chat. He's a long-time listener here.
Long time
Sox listener. Did lose, by
long
the way.
Long time, yeah. Chatter. Yeah.
Sox did lose 1-0. But no, going back into your question, like, and I mentioned the Tommy John stuff. Like, is that what they're trying to limit, right? Like, are they trying to limit injuries down the stretch? And you have these highly velo guys who you're trying to, you know, cut back on. Because McDougal was going over three innings, like, during the regular season, like, during the heart of the spring and the summer. Like, he was, you know, up to six innings per game. And maybe they see something, right? Maybe his velo's down, and I have no idea. I'm not a minor league guy. But so maybe it's something like that. I don't know. You know, but we've obviously seen them go to Birmingham straight to the majors before. Kalkoff, Grant Taylor did it, you know, what, 4 months ago? So it's not impossible, but if they're worried about injury, I don't know if you want to call a guy up. I'm really not sure, but I really do wonder if it's something to do with those Tommy John injuries. Like I said, they had seven in between now and then.
I think that's exactly right, seven.
Yeah.
That we're hoping most of them can come back.
Right, and Tommy John is, you know, not what it used to be in terms of, like, career-ending injury, but, you know, it's still
no, and it's gone from, like, an 18-month thing down to, you know, it, at this point, it's like 12 months.
Right.
You know, for a lot of guys, right. Anyway.
So, and I know I think our own Ian Eskridge just talked about, like, sometimes the balls are difficult to grip in Charlotte. Like, sometimes they mud the balls up differently, and some guys aren't able to, you know, grip it right. So, yeah, Charlotte's a difficult place to pitch, and you're kind of seeing it this year with some of those guys there. But yeah, we'll see kind of going forward if what they do with Tanner. I think he's a very interesting prospect. If not, I do expect him to be up next year for sure.
Yeah, and you know the thing, I guess for me, my question was, when you're going through this time of season. And you have, like, you traded away Adrian Houser, and, you know, you've got some guys that are beat up, dinged up. My hope is that there's at least somebody that you can come in to answer the call, right, at the MLB level. Now, and let's not get this twisted, by the way. I am not saying they should bring up their best and you know, the White Sox, because all of a sudden they've got this power surge and the bats have come to life since the All-Star break in ways that we did not expect. I don't think anybody expected. I'm not saying, like, the White Sox should, you know, be winning all these games, right? This is still a throwaway season. You know, we're still in the major throes of a rebuild, right? You know, and even if they were to go out and spend some money in the offseason, I'm not expecting them to be world beaters next year. Could they possibly be contenders in the division? Maybe. They would definitely be a lot more fun to watch. But I'm not expecting them to make moves that are going to, you know, you would expect a serious contender to make, right? But at the same time, when we talk about protecting arms the way we are right now in this podcast, you got to kind of wonder how many of these guys in the bullpen they think are going to come back. Now, granted, a lot of them are on one-year contracts. There might be guys with some arb. There might be some guys that just, you know, let go. But I think there's something to be said about the devil you know versus the devil you don't, right? You know, that old saying. And Ethan Katz, knowing the stable of guys that he has to work with right now and being as solid as they have been since, like I said, when they finally got most of the right players in place for the bullpen, you'd almost want to think maybe we do bring back a good number of these guys, even though we've got guys coming up in the system next year. Like you said, there is seven Tommy Johns there. So, you know, I think my thought is why continue as long as the White Sox did to do the opener and bullpen game and not actually get a in there and up here and ready to go sooner than they have, you know, like we talk about this there's a little bit of, like, through the teeth talk here. And I'm not saying it's you and I, the organization, which they haven't done this year a whole lot of, they've been pretty open. Getz has been pretty open about his plans. You know, guys like Fuller and the rest of the, you know, the staff have kind of come out and, like, here, this is the direction we want to go in. this is what we're doing. They seemingly were pursuing that. And all of a sudden there was just this weird, like, oh, what? It almost felt unprepared after the deadline. Like, hey, we traded Adrian Hauser away. Right. And we don't really know what we're going to do. Like, are we going to sit here? We're going to wait for Martin Perez to come back. And is he going to be, in a, you know, ready to start after a couple of, you know, little rehab stints, one in Birmingham and one in Charlotte, you know, like, I don't know, man. Am I wrong to feel like this was a little unprepared?
No, I mean, I think that's fair. And I mean, they've had like some weird responses with everything. Like, there's been times I don't understand pitching with a 4-man rotation. I think it puts you at a huge disadvantage. I've always felt that way of just, you're taxing your bullpen. You are, every time you do it, you're forcing, you know, 5 or 6 guys to pitch, especially if you don't have a long relief guy. And that hurts the bull. I mean, that puts a ton of pressure on your bullpen. You have to do stuff. And they've pitched with, I mean, there's a stretch where they pitched like a month with a 4-man rotation because guys kept getting hurt. And yeah, I mean, I have to think that like that puts a limit on everything. And you're kind of seeing it these last 2 weeks, like smartly, I will add, but they're doing it. You know, they will call a guy up here for 1 day and send him right back down because, you know, they've rotated like Elvis Peguero, Owen White, Winkelman, and Hudson. Like, they're just playing musical chairs with those guys. I mean, those guys have been to here to Charlotte probably 4 times each. I mean,
yeah, and a couple
now, 2 of them have gone on the IL.
Well, those 2 that have gone on the IL, I think might be ghost.
Yeah, phantom ILs.
Phantom ILs, because, I mean, when you option a guy, he's got to go back down for a minimum of 15 days before being recalled, right? Unless there's an injury replacement.
Right.
I.e., you know, somebody goes back to the IL, you know, or maybe Sean Burke or, you know, whoever it was that, you know, gets sent wherever they're going or, you know. Actually, Sean Burke wasn't sent on the IL, was he? He was just sent down, correct?
He was just outrighted. Not outrighted, optioned.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like you said, there's these guys, these IL stints that, you know, you're like, oh, the guy came up, he pitched yesterday. Oh, he's got an elbow. Back-to-back days,
it's happened.
Right. Elbow, strained elbow, got to go down so we can call somebody up. And to me, that just screams that they said, hey, wait a minute. We probably have been killing our bullpen. We've been killing some arms up here. This is the only way we're going to be able to shuffle guys back and forth is to give them the phantom IL start. But eventually, you're going to run out of IL stints too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. There's just, we've got to, I just feel like that was mishandled from the trade deadline. I mean, right off the bat, they just felt a little unprepared. It's the only knock I've ever had against Bannister and his crew as far as pitchers go. And the only reason I say Bannister is because pitchers are his thing. But, you know, this it lies on Getz, too. Getz being the GM has got to be ready for these kinds of things. And it just feels a little weird. So what's up, Dove Man? Checking in. First round pick will be a shortstop. After that, I want to see the Sox go on a run of pitching rounds 2 through 7 after Blake Larson's. We need pitching. You know what? So because we're talking about pitching, he's, you know, chiming in on next year's draft. I don't want to get that far ahead and say that's how it's going to happen. Obviously, we'd have to look at the draft class to see what's, you know. But if we are looking at bats, then, yeah, chances are it is going to be a shortstop. I think the next few drafts, until somebody comes up with a new draft model, I think you're going to see a run on shortstops the same way you did this year. I think all teams have pretty much adapted that mentality of the shortstop being one of the most, if not the most, athletic player on the field and one of the most easy to move around if they need to be moved off of shortstop and into another position. But the one thing the White Sox do not turn away from and are usually really good at is drafting pitchers. So we'll see how that goes. And there's a ton of depth. But the unfortunate part is a lot of that depth is at levels that just isn't quite ready yet. And, again, we've been talking about it since early in the season. There's a ton of injuries right now.
Yeah.
You know, we got some favorites around here that we can't wait to see come back and do some things. Hopefully be ready for the season next year. But then again, you know, we're looking at how limited are they going to be after coming back from Tommy John. You know, some of these guys are, you know, getting ready to start throwing programs or maybe started throwing off a flat ground already. So we'll keep an eye on that stuff. But the whole point of this was just to talk about the seemingly unpreparedness of the situation where, like Jacob said, it was close to a month where we're in a four-man rotation and we're absolutely taxing the irons that we do have here. So, Jake, I'm going to give you an opportunity here to, unless you have something to add to that, I want to give you an opportunity here. I know you had some notes that you wanted to get to this evening. So, you got anything else on the bullpen?
Not really. I just want to give a shout out to Weekelman. Glad he's back.
Yeah, welcome back.
But no, I think we hit everything on the bullpen and the pitching staff in a whole. Right, I did want to bring this up for you. Martin Perez pitches well tonight. There's a $10 million mutual option. Do you think they pick that up next year?
I personally would.
I agree.
I mean, here's the thing. If you weren't going to keep him, now granted, I understand that, you know, injuries and the like and whatnot, but if you weren't going to keep him, I would have felt like you would be looking for a trade partner at some point. You know, maybe they still do in the off season, but I think the $10 million, and again, we're looking at a team that's going to have a virtually non-existent payroll next year, right? At least what it looks like on the books right
virtually
now.
Virtually? Might be non-existent in general.
Right. So $10 million for a guy of his skill set, to me, is a drop in the bucket. I would like to see it. Now, what the White Sox have in store, I don't know. It's difficult to say, but I'm curious to see if Ishbia is going to inject money into that lineup at all in the rotation, but man, I'd love to see it. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. I think they're going to need another veteran guy as all these guys are coming back from Tommy John. And I think it's important to keep guys who have success here. I'll also be interested to see if they bring back Adrian Hauser, who is destroying his free agent value currently in Tampa Bay, but pitched well here. Obviously, I think there'd be a kind of a mutual want to return here. So see if there's another guy I'm keeping my eye on this winter.
This is funny. I'm sorry, Uncle Ted. I'm going to have to throw you under the bus on this one. It says White Sox are good at drafting pitchers, ? Huh? I'm going to let you go ahead. I'm not even going to entertain that comment. I'm going to let you go ahead and do the research on the interims. But yeah, the White Sox have been really good at drafting pitchers in general. I'm not saying whether it's a bullpen or starters, but if you go back and take a look at their drafts and what guys have done,
especially in the Shirley era
and staying power in the major league at the major league level. Yeah, take a look around and don't just look at the White Sox roster, cause they have traded quite a few as well, but yeah, they do. They're pretty good at drafting and developing pitching prospects. And yeah. I will not entertain an argument on that. I won't even do it. So save your fingertips. Don't break your fingertips trying to kill your keyboard here. But anywho, yeah. So moving on.
Yeah, I wanted to bring this up. Shout out to Elijah, who does great work for the Future Sox. Since the All-Star break, Kyle Teal is hitting slashing 312, 354, 519, four homers, four doubles, 12 driven in. He's 23 years old. Edgar Caro, 306, 354, 486, three homers, four doubles, 10 driven in. He's just 22 years old. Are the White Sox on pace to have the best catching duo going forward in the major leagues in the next 5 years?
If they continue doing that, absolutely. You're going to tell me you're going to find another team with two catchers that can do that? Not right now. I mean, are either one of them Adley Rushman numbers?
Adley's been bad. Right. I don't know if you've looked into his numbers, but Adley's been bad.
I mean, right now, but I mean.
Right. Yeah, yeah. He'll bounce back.
Overall.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I don't know if either of these guys are going to be, like, top five catchers in the league, but, like, I think both of them have a chance to be top 10. Like, if they're, the seventh and eighth best catchers in the league, I mean, you've really
got something. Believe offensively they both have an opportunity to be within the top five. I could see, if we're talking about 22 and 23-year-old catchers right now, and, hopefully at that age you're still growing, you're still progressing. Who knows? We might see even bigger, better numbers out of these guys. I don't see why you don't have two within the top five and, maybe even a top three. One of those guys is a top three guy. The only thing is, as things go on, do the White Sox continue to do what they've been doing and try to get both of them in the lineup as often as they can have for their bats? Or do they go a different route? But do they carry a third catcher at some point? And then, let's say next year and beyond, like, how do you continue this? Does one of them become trade bait?
Yeah.
If you've got guys doing what they do, what these two are doing right now, probably can scoop a hefty trade value. So, but yeah, I mean, to go from not having a catcher, a true catcher, since AJ Pierzynski, to watching Edgar Caro do what he does, he's a defensive catcher, he can gun guys down, and he can hit. And then Kyle Teal, who's just absolutely smacking the cover off the ball right now. Awesome stuff to see. It's been a long time since we've really had a good catcher on this ball club.
Yeah.
Yasmani, his first season here was awesome. But after that, I mean,
all off.
One season doesn't really make it on a 4-year deal, or he was, his back was completely shot and his hammies were gone, and yeah, difficult. So.
Yeah, I just saw, it's impressive. I mean, not only the numbers they're putting up and at that position, that's hard to do. Like, catchers normally aren't putting up impressive offensive numbers, but they are. And not even that, but like the age they're doing it at. I mean, 22 and 23, like, that's extremely young to be putting up as impressive of seasons. I mean, they're going to be really fun to watch. And I think it does bring up a decent question of, like, what are they going to do with them, right? Because, like, next year the DH spot looks interesting because, do you have a space for Lenin? And if you do have a space for Lenin, then what do you do with Chase? There's kind of a logjam at DH, but or the middle infield that could cause some players to move to DH. But yeah, I think it's really interesting to see what they're going to do going forward.
All right, so I'm gonna kind of go off script a little bit here, and you bring up Lenin and the long jam. What are your thoughts on Lenin moving to first base full time?
I don't mind it. The only issue is, what do you do if you have to kick Colson to third? Like, and this is a hypothetical, but like, you have shortstops in the system. Are you moving those shortstops? Because I'm not even talking about Billy Carlson. Like, Billy Carlson's like 5 years away. I'm not worried about that right now. But like, you have other shorts. Like, you have so many shortstops in the system. I think they have five guys that I think are moderately intriguing. Do you move those guys to the outfield? Because if you move Colson to third, then you have to put Miguel somewhere. And the other issue too is now you have Curtis Mead, who you, I think, like to play at first. Also, I'd like to add that Lenin hasn't been awful at second.
No, he has not.
The blunders have been horrible, but like, every play, the offense is average. Like, FRV, outs above average, it's a zero. He's a 500, like, he is an average fielder, which with that hitting is outstanding.
He's sitting at 17 dingers and what, like 55 RBIs or something like that out of a second baseman. Those numbers look almost gaudy, to be honest with you. When you're hitting like 270, whatever it was. See, I think he's probably down to about 270 now after today's game, but when you're averaging close to 275 and you've got 17 dingers and there's still almost a month of baseball left to go, and probably like 5 or 6 weeks of baseball left to go. I would think that looks great on paper as a shortstop. The only thing that would bug me about moving him, you know, and all those other questions aside, because you bring up a lot of good points as far as like, what are you going to do with third base if you got, or, you know, shortstop, and who do you move where? Like, all that makes great sense. I'll be honest with you, more out of Miguel Vargas, and we start to see more out of these up-and-coming prospects that we have. He may be the odd man out, unfortunately. And I'm not saying this as a knock on Miguel. He's definitely stepped his game up this year from what he was doing last year. I just don't know that if you've got a guy who profiles better, he's going to have to take another step next season, right, to be able to do that. The big thing with Lenine is if we move Lenine over to first base, and I know that, you know, we can talk about the day and age of like your corners got to be bangers, or they got to be hitting, you know, 25 or more a year, right? You would essentially like your 30 home run guys to be coming at, you know, the corner infield spots and the corner outfield spots for that matter. I don't know that Lenine Sosa has 30 home run power, right? He's probably going to hit 20 this year as a shortstop. And we've been talking about that all season long, a guy with a potential 20, 22, maybe 23 home runs a season would be fantastic. But, you know, the idea that power doesn't necessarily have to come from the corners anymore, I think, and there's a lot of folks out there, I've seen it recently, where a lot of folks are like, I don't think that's what they're looking for. But here's the thing. If you take away 10 or 12 homers from the first base spot, you better be able to replace them with the middle infield spot that you're going to be taking Lenine Sosa out of, right? Especially in a ballpark like Guaranteed Rate Field, where you should be, the White Sox should be in the top six or seven in baseball, in home runs, specifically just because of where they play at home.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
So if you're not getting that, if you're not getting that kind of production out of your first base spot, you got to find it somewhere else on the field. And I don't know that they have that right now. So it's an interesting question. You brought it up, and you brought up Sosa and what you do with them. And I just had to throw it out there because this is where my brain goes.
I'd like to stay on it, honestly. I think with Lenine though, like, I think they need to pick a position. Like, I hate, you know, you already have a guy who's struggling, not struggling, but like, it's kind of having these blunders around, you know, the infield and playing first. Like, I think they need to pick a position to keep him at it, because I think he's, you know, he's probably the best hitter right now on the Sox. Like, I'm not even like, yeah,
well, I mean, you can make the argument. He is.
Yeah, right.
He is. He has been the most consistent hitter all season.
Right. So, I mean, he's going to be in the light. Like, I have way more faith in him right now than I do Chase Mydroth. Like, and I'm not giving up on Chase. Like, I think he could be a solid player, but like, Lenine Sosa could be a serious, like, top five second baseman in the league. Like, listen, that's a low bar. Second base is in a snack position here, but like, there's legit potential here for Lenine Sosa. And I think you have to keep that bat in the lineup. And you have to get as much defensive value out of it as possible. And so I think with that, I think they really need to figure out where they want to play him and keep him there. I recommend second base. I think you can move Chase as a rotational guy. You know, whether you want to play him at short and kick Colson to third on every other day, if you want to try Chase at third, I wouldn't recommend it. I don't think he definitely doesn't have the arm. You know, do you move Chase to the outfield? I don't know, but I'd really be big on keeping Lenin Sosa at second base and just keeping him there. Or if you want to put him at first, fine, but you better keep him there.
Well, and you know, the thing about the other thing about Lenin Sosa too is he's only 25 years old.
Right.
There's still room to grow. Who knows? Maybe he finds some defensive prowess.
Yeah.
Between and like we said, see, Jamie says in the chat here that he is bad defensively. And I think you might be a few minutes late here because we actually just went over how he's been right at league average for second baseman all season long. He had a gaffe in yesterday's
game. Yeah, now he's a minus 108.
And he had a gaffe two games in a row here. He just went to a minus one just since as of Sunday, he was still a zero.
Yeah.
I mean, Monday and last night, you know, with a couple of – and one of those errors was tough. Like, I don't know that even if you make a play, you make the out, but, you know, it is what it is. It's – you know, I don't know that because – I don't know that because he's been improved this year that he doesn't continue to improve, I guess is what I'm saying. At 25 right. years old, there's still room to improve. He had not played a whole lot of second base. Not saying that he hasn't played second base, but he didn't play a ton of second base until this moment. Who knows? Maybe, you know, in the offseason, it's something he continually works on. But you absolutely, you know what, you have to find somewhere for him because you cannot take his bat away. And, you know, I see comments sell high in here. But, you know, the thing is, we sell high on him right now. Even with the logjam of middle infielders, none of those middle infielders right now in this moment profile as high as he is in what he's doing offensively right now. Now, granted, you know, again, we just drafted a ton of shortstops and infield guys, and that might change over the course of the next 2 years. But we're not looking at this being like a – I don't think the White Sox feel like this is a 6-year rebuild, right? This is a 3-4 max where they feel like they are going to be in a good spot to contend and contend annually, right? Yeah. If we're talking about, you know, selling on Lenin Sosa now just to get a couple of these other middle infielders an opportunity, I don't know that that's the answer. Me personally, anyway.
Yeah, and to piggyback off of that, like I think the deadline proved that, right? Like they went out and they got Curtis Meade and two AAA arms. Like that's kind of what they're pushing for. And to add more on Lenin, because I think he's, you know, we're both big fans of the Lenin Sosa fan club, and it's cool to see it pay off. But like honestly, instead of defense, like I'm okay with the defense he's putting out. If he could learn to walk at any clip more than he's doing right now, I don't need him to be a 10, you know, walk percent guy, but like if he can get that on base percentage up a little bit, that's what I'd be more interested in than improving the defense. Because man, if you get the on base percentage up, I mean, the dude's hitting 271 with a 299 on base. Like if you can get the on base up, like you have a legitimate player here. That's more what I would be worried about than the defense. I'm really not worried about the defense because of the bat. I mean, the bat is tremendously good. It's been cool to see his development. Everybody thought he was, you know, kind of a quad A player. There were some Lenin Sosa DFA tweets out there, and it's cool to see him really turn it around here quickly.
Yeah, he silenced the haters, that's for sure. And, you know, I know there's guys like, we might see Sam Antonacci soon. Yeah. You know what I mean? I know that there are other players that people would like to get their eyeballs on at the major league level. But I don't think Lenin Sosa is the guy you throw to the wolves when that happens. I don't know how the White Sox are going to approach it, but I definitely don't take the guy who's been the most consistent hitter on the ball club for the entirety of the 2025 season. It just that would be the biggest head scratcher of the season to me.
Yeah.
Because how do you take away the guy who's been your best hitter all year?
And especially a team who's like desperate for power. Like they have no power. And if you're going to, I mean, combined with Colson, right? If Colson's going to be a 30 home run guy, which I mean, I think he's got the potential to be, if you can get 50 home runs out of your middle infield, that makes you a lot more flexible everywhere else. Because I mean, and those are two guys like 50 home runs. Like that's not an insane goal for that, for Sosa and Montgomery in the middle infield. Like that's, it's kind of a modest goal for those two. And if you can get that out of your middle infield, I think you're really happy for the White Sox, especially with the power, lack thereof, of power in the system.
Yeah, you know, and the funny thing is we're talking about Lenin Sosa and you know, what's going on defensively. As a matter of fact, I think it was earlier today. I can't remember if it was today or yesterday, but recently on one of the socials, I saw somebody make the comparison to Marcus Semien. Because if you remember when Marcus Semien was like 24, 25 years old and just coming up with the White Sox, absolute butcher in the field. Horrendous. White Sox fans were happy to see him go, a lot of them. And he wasn't hitting anywhere close to what Lenin Sosa is doing right now. He leaves Chicago. He works on everything, becomes, you know, a guy who's, you know, in batting title conversations and MVP conversations, and has just had a career path since he went to Oakland and started doing things there and beyond. Would you feel comfortable if you saw Lenin Sosa go somewhere else and do that stuff? I'd be like, man, it was the biggest gaffe in the world.
Yeah.
You know, worse than Tatis. And you can talk about that Tatis thing all you want to, but I don't know. And then, you know, Jamie Wallace says, like, here we go. I'm just going to pull this one up. Colson moving to third base is inevitable with all the middle infielders. That might be true. I don't really know. It's difficult to prognosticate what they're going to do because, again, I mean, yeah, we do have a ton of middle infielders. But I think that was done by design for the simple fact that they have been picking up guys they feel are athletic enough to move around to other places. So if Colson Montgomery continues to hit the ball the way he is, and we feel like the most comfortable position for him to be out there and continue hitting without messing with his head too much, a shortstop, he stays a shortstop. And then you move somebody else with a little bit more athletic ability. Wolf says that some of these infielders are going to be grabbing their outfield gloves this offseason. I think we're going to see a bunch of these guys in the fall league and the winter leagues. You're going to see a lot of these middle infielders playing some outfield. That's inevitable too. I think that's just, and it would be dumb for the White Sox not to do as much as they could to develop these guys in multiple positions.
Yeah. 100%. Cause I mean, there is a legitimate backlog of talent of the middle. I mean, Antonacci, Bergola, Mike Golan, Jeurel Perez. We're also big fans of the Jeurel Perez fan club. Oh, as it's mentioned, LOL. Albertus, although I'm not 100% sure if he's real or not, haven't seen. I don't even know if I've seen a photo of him yet. But even like Bonnemer, like if Bonnemer ends up being a left fielder, wouldn't shock me at all.
Like, no, and you know what?
Me one bit.
The Brooks Baldwin experiment might be pay it off. You know what I mean? Like, don't be shocked if you see this guy. In his entire offseason, you know, workout plan is learning how to play outfield better.
Yeah.
Because what he's been doing at the plate the last couple of weeks is nothing short of spectacular, considering his struggles when he first came around. You know, so, I mean, the White Sox are doing good things, right?
Yeah.
We're not seeing the results in the win-loss column yet. Nobody expected to. But the one thing that anybody should take away from all of this is development doesn't look like it's going to be the perennial issue that it has been for so long. Because they are, Like I saw, you know, James, our very own James Fox, put a tweet out yesterday about it's time to bring up somebody. It was one of the pitchers.
Paulette, maybe?
It was Paulette, Peyton Paulette. And, you know, somebody on Twitter said, are you kidding me? Time to ruin another prospect. And like, what? Ruin another prospect? Like, the Stocks have a ton of prospects up on this ball club right now that are actually showing signs of development. Like, what are we talking about ruining, guys? You know, this whole show, we've been talking about guys like Kyle Teal, Edgar Carroll, Lenny Sosa, Brooks Baldwin, Colson Montgomery, a whole slew of pitchers.
Yeah. Like,
the one thing that stands out to me more than anything right now is they're actually developing guys, and they're continuing development at the MLB level.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, most White Sox fans' biggest fears, like, I've gone through, like, four rebuilds. I know how this ends. Like, there's constant comparisons to the previous rebuilds. Like, it happened, and I saw it a ton over the offseason. I think at one of our first podcast episodes, I mentioned it. I was like, you know, this is not previous rebuilds. Like, there's a more dire need or dire want to develop players, and they're doing it more with analytics. Like, it's there. Like, they hired over 40 analytical people. Like, those aren't made up numbers. Those are stats that happened. You know, the development is clear. Like, you saw with Banister last year, and obviously it's worked for Fuller. I mean, look at Colson Montgomery. If you need any more proof that they can develop someone, Colson Montgomery just randomly turned it around. I wanted to bring this up.
I know you
think Jamie Wallace.
Yeah. You know what? As soon as I saw that come up in the chat, I was like, that's a great segue.
So, notably, first episode I want to
read this to our listeners who are not here live to see it, see the comment on the screen. But Jamie Wallace brings up wasting Elko. Wasting Elko! Exclamation points across the screen. A real first baseman with 35 to 40 bomb potential. What are we doing? Go ahead, Jacob. I'm sorry.
So I'm a Tim Elko hater. Love the dude. Was there for his MLB debut. But I'm a hater of, like, his game. I think the strikeout rate's too high. He can't hit MLB hitters. But does Lenin Sosa, after 4 years, finally kind of turning it around, having this breakout year, does it give you any faith to bring up Elko and just pray he figures it out at the plate? Because I think 35, 40 bomb potential is, like, that's not insane. Like, he has legitimate power. Like, that's not a question.
He also has 300 strikeout potential.
Right, right. And he hits 150. Like, but does seeing the Lenin Sosa development, does that give you any want to call Elko back up and just pray he figures it out?
So I'm actually big on bringing Elko up, especially, you know, September 1st when rosters expand, if only to showcase his power, because if there isn't a place for him on this White Sox ball club, then they need to be able to show other clubs what he can do firsthand. Obviously all these clubs have scouts, so it's not like we're not, you know, they're not looking at him, what he's doing in the minor leagues. Right. You know, and again, a lot of his bombs are coming in Charlotte, which I've said many times before. It's like hitting a golf ball with an aluminum baseball bat. If you've never done that, I don't suggest trying it unless you're in a ginormous open field. But, you know, the thing is Elko has been talked about for a long time as a prospect. And the major thing that's always been talked about him is his power. So I think if we can get him up here and show off more of that power, I don't really think he was given a fair shake when he was called up earlier this season. Too many sporadic games, right? Where it was like, oh, we're only going to bring him in against this pitcher and we're going to let somebody else play. And, you know, there wasn't any kind of consistency in his playing time and getting his at bats. And as we've seen time and time again, it usually takes guys a few, you know, 20, 30, 40 at-bats to really settle in, if not more, 80 at-bats. Or if they come up hot, that's how quickly, you know, pitchers take to figure these guys out before they slump again. I don't think Elko was given that shot. The one thing I do want to see is get him an opportunity to hit some bombs here on the south side. So if he's not going to be here, maybe we get a suitor in a trade at some point.
Yeah, and I think the other issue, too, is like he doesn't have 4 years. Like, in 4 years, he's going to be 30 years old. Like, Lenin was called up when he was 22. No more first baseman in the outfield. I've seen way too many first basemen in the outfield. We're not doing that again.
I mean, he has played some outfield. I'll say this. It's not – it hasn't been awful, but it's not exactly pretty either. So,
I don't care.
You know, if you really want to know the full skinny on that, I suggest hopping on with James and Ian and spitting that question out at Ian, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to tell you his thoughts on that. I already know what they are, and he's basically – they're not bad, by the way. I know I'm giggling a little bit, but his thoughts aren't bad. You know, he'll tell you, like, he's okay. But the reality is it's you know, he's probably closer to Daniel B. Polka in right field than like Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets. Well, those guys looked like they were wearing cement boots out there and you know, plodding around. But Elko is a decent first baseman.
Oh yeah, at first base, yeah.
If he can get the swing and miss out of his game, he could be a potential stud, right? He could be the next Canerco. Right. But, you know, that remains to be seen. So,
like, and Jimmy Wallace, go ahead.
No, go ahead. This is the comment I wanted to highlight here. So,
yeah, that's what I was going. Like, my answer is Mead. And then follows it up with Mead, no power or glove. Mead's got a good glove. Like, Mead's got an holy, I think I just Mead's got an above average glove and he can play multiple positions and then can play him well. Like, he's an above average fielder and he's a former top, 30 prospect.
Yes.
And he's been put hitting it well.
He does like have
an 84 OPS plus this year. Like, I don't know. I'm out on Tim Elko. I don't know if I was ever in on Tim Elko, but.
Well, if you ask the experts, are going to tell you that Mead was always a higher ceiling guy than Elko, for all the reasons we've already said. Elko, his biggest thing is power, and without that, he's barely serviceable. So
he's like bad Adam Dunn.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think he's probably a better defender than Adam Dunn. He's actually decent.
All right,
defender.
Well, yeah, Adam, offensively, what was the
but off for
Adam 2011 Adam Dunn? That's the profile.
Yeah, 30+ home runs, 260 strikeouts, and a 220 batting average at best. So yeah, I don't know. It's just going to be one of those things. Like, the White Sox always have these positions of need, right? Second base has always been like it's been a glaring hole for years. And now we seemingly have a serviceable second baseman and people aren't happy with it. Right field has been a glaring position of need for so many years. And Mike Tauchman has filled it fantastically this season. And I know there was, you know, Mike Tauchman should only be a platoon player because he only hits. And no, you know what? He has shown since the break, and actually going back before the break, that he can hit lefties and righties. And he's got an OPS that's deserving of being an everyday starter. And I don't care how old he is. I think you bring him back on the second year of his contract next year. You don't let him go. But that's just me. Shot.
No, he'll be here.
And no, I don't. I really honestly don't foresee. Are we talking Braden Montgomery, Jamie? Or are we talking Colson Montgomery? Because I don't think Colson's. I don't think you ever see him in the outfield in the MLB level.
By the way, TJ Stats, who posts some really good stuff, just kind of some leaderboard stuff. Colson is 10th right now in the MLB in outs above average at shortstop. I tweeted that out today. Like, he's a legitimate great shortstop. Like, he,
which is why I don't think they moves off of it.
Yeah. No, man, Braden Montgomery. Braden's going to be an interesting player. I don't know if he's going to go to left. I just hope they don't put him in center if they trade Luis.
He says he's filing. He's filing our comments on Elko, by the way.
I have had plenty of Elko hate comments.
Listen, I get it. I get it. I get it. I, you know, and I want to see what his back can do. But, man, I mean, if you guys are watching him in the minor league level, he is outmatched by pitching a lot, regardless of the 35, 40 bombs he could potentially hit. He's outmatched a lot. You want to talk about swords? Dude's got them. Dude's got a lot of swords on him this year, buddy. Just saying. Get the MILB package going and check him out. He gets flailing. You know what I'm saying? He gets flailing, dude. He gets embarrassed. It's and this is not a knock on Tim Elko. I do like him, but you know, he's a DePino. Are you just gonna go down the list now, Jamie? All right, buddy. We're not gonna get into DePino right now, but yeah, I mean, look, we've been talking about development a lot this show. And if Ryan Fuller and his guys can get Elko to have a better approach at the plate, who knows? That's all. I'll just leave it.
Give him the offseason. Like, if he comes back in the spring and doesn't strike out at a 40% rate, we might have something. But right. Until that, if you're striking out at a 30-40% clip in the minors, it's never going to work in the majors.
That's yeah,
just how that's gonna work?
Expect that
off Braden Montgomery, who I like.
You can expect a 5-point. You can add 5 points to that strikeout clip almost immediately coming up to the major league level. So that's not gonna be. It's not gonna be serviceable, unfortunately.
Right.
So if the development we've seen from Lenin Sosa this year, the step we saw Miguel Vargas take this year, what we're seeing Brooks Baldwin do over the last couple of weeks, what we're seeing from a lot of White Sox hitters right now, if Ryan Fuller can pull off some kind of magic with Tim Elko and just get that whiff rate down, then yeah, I can see him coming up and being the first baseman of the future.
That's a big if. He's a guy who's always had strikeout issues.
His entire life.
Yeah.
Or maybe at least since, you know, high school.
Yeah. 100%. So, well, we are approaching the
107 minutes.
Yeah.
1 hour and 7 minutes, pardon me.
Do you want to talk roster expansion, or do you want to get into that next week?
I mean, we can talk about it slightly, but, I mean, it's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming. I mean, next week we're only a few days away, so we might as well talk about it now.
Sure, I have nothing to do. I'm serious about that. That kind of sounded sarcastic, but I Jamie's gonna keep putting hot takes here. So let's start roster expansion. Hitter wise, I think it's one of Corey Lee, Tim Elko, or Will Robertson. There is a name though, Jacob Gonzalez. Any shot we see him up here for a cup of coffee at the end of September?
I don't know.
He's majorly cooled off. The OPS is only at 735. Like, but maybe for funsies? I don't know. But he was the only exciting hitter name I could find to throw in here.
Was that Brian Ramos, who's also kind of cooled?
Ramos I didn't put down.
I would typically lean more towards Corey Lee than anything just because of the usage of Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro and getting their bats in the lineup as much as possible. And if, you know, say one of them needs a break, you can spell them with Corey Lee. But the other thing is I don't know if I want to cool either one of these guys either because they're just hot right now. But I would think I personally would lean towards Corey Lee if not Corey Lee, then I would like to see Elko. I think Will Robertson's a great name to throw out there. I just don't think we see him up here.
Yeah, they have four outfielders right now, and so I think Lee makes a lot of sense if Venable truly is like that scared of playing Caro and Teal together.
I mean, obviously we've seen it some already where they're both in the lineup, but not as much as most Sox fans would like. You know, I think a lot of Sox fans would like to see it on a near game-to-game basis where, you know, you're seeing both of them in the lineup, one behind the dish, one at the DH. Problem is one of those guys gets hurt, you're at least stuck for the rest of that game where you're making a double switch if you can to save the DH position, or if not, then you're just going with a nine-man batting lineup and you're losing that designated hitter. So
yeah,
and again,
let's go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, and again, they're both young, so you know,
right?
We don't necessarily need to overextend either one of them either.
Jamie Wallace puts it in the chat. Surprisingly, Lee wasn't traded. I do wonder if they use this as a audition for Corey Lee to be traded this offseason, because, I mean, I think there's legit. He's a legit backup catcher somewhere. Like a team can use Corey Lee, a plus defensive catcher, good pop time, can control the bases, and I think there's some pop in that bat. The average will never be good enough for him to be a starter, but like he's a solid backup catcher. Like somebody will take a shot on him. And so I wonder if they kind of use that as like an audition for him and he's shipped in the offseason.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I am 100% good with that. Who, as far as pitchers, do you want to see come up when rosters expand?
Yeah, so I think we've talked Tanner McDougal. Noah Schultz was another name that I brought up. I don't think he's brought up. I think it'll be Paulette's got a shot. There's also a chance to just grab one of these relievers who's already been up and just add him to the back end as another guy. Like Hudson, Pagero, once he gets off the IL. So maybe there's a shot there. It is weird though, because they both went on the 15 day, not the 10 day, which I thought was interessante. But
well, I think because you're not going to be able to bring him back before 15 days either way, so why not?
Right. Like, is Iriarte another September call up potentially? He's had a rough go of it.
Actually like that idea, even though he's been struggling. I wouldn't mind seeing him get some one-on-one time with Katz. And you know, obviously when they shut down the minor league clubs, you're gonna have some additional instructors around, you know, whether or not they're gonna be in the dugout or in the field, but you're gonna see guys in the clubhouse that are getting some extra work. You know, you're gonna have your minor league staff in the building once minor league season shut down and playoffs are over, if you happen to be on one of the teams that makes the playoffs. So yeah.
Also wonder if they bring like Burke or Cannon back in a reliever role just to kind of try it out, see how they do. But because Burke was successful as a reliever last year.
Burke I can see. Cannon
is a profiles reliever.
If you can't find your command in 3, 4, 5 innings, what makes you think you're going to be able to get command straight out of the gate coming out of the bullpen with no time? You know, you've got 8, 10, 12 warm-up pitches in the bullpen and boom, you're out on the field. I just don't know. I think if Cannon is going to have a shot at coming back to the MLB, he's got to focus on getting himself right. And I just don't think I don't foresee that happening in season this year, unfortunately.
I think that's a fair take.
Samuel's.
Yeah, I'm kind of out on Jonathan Cannon. Yeah, I saw that. I was gonna.
Samuel's and Vala.
Talk about a hot
leader of the year, Dove Man. All right, I'm gonna throw this out there in so that our listeners can hear it. 13 Dove Man, heater of the year, Samuel, and I don't know if I call this a heater. I'm gonna call this hot take. Heater of the year, Samuel Zavala, will outperform Braden Montgomery in the majors. I like Samuel Zavala. I don't think he has the ceiling that Braden Montgomery has. I think that's spicy. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a nuts take. I like it, though.
I mean, I love throwing it out there.
But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of not out on Zavala, but I'm not.
Oh, I'm definitely not out. I mean,
he's 21 in high A, but yeah, I believe a lot more in Montgomery, especially the heater that he's on. Like, I think Montgomery could be the best piece left. Now, I did just crap all over Tim Elko for strikeout rates, and Montgomery's is not pretty, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like Samuel Zavala. I just need to see more from him. You know, like you said, hi. I want to see what he can do in Birmingham and even Charlotte, you know, once we get to that point. But the one thing for sure is outfield depth in the system's a little thin. So I don't know, when you're talking about probably the two potentially highest upside outfielder guys. And like, Samuel Zavala, like, is he a true outfielder? I don't know.
I think he's more of an outfielder. He's a true outfielder.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a little early to predict it, but I also feel like it's a little spicy. I think Braden's a little more toolsy. I'll say that. I think he's got a potentially higher upside, but
Montgomery's going to hit more home runs. The slug's going to be way higher on Montgomery than it is Zavala. I think Zavala's a better defender, though. But I think Piemont's going to be twice the player of Zavala.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's actually, you know, the more you sit here and think about it, the more that is a, that's actually a comparison that we might have to sit down and take a look at and really spend some time on. But again, we're talking about guys at different levels in their game right now. It's going to be difficult to say. So I don't know. Thanks for that one, Dub, man. You definitely got the creative juices flowing. You definitely got the brain power moving on that one. So, all right. You want to give us some hot takes or heaters, if you will, to put a ball in this thing tonight, Jacob?
Yeah, we haven't brought him up enough. Shout out Brooks Baldwin. He'll be my heater.
Damn, still mine.
I'm sorry.
It's all good. I have a couple.
Yeah, I think he's been impressive. I'm excited what he can do going forward. Obviously, the White Lurie thing has come to full effect as he has now taken up the outfield. And yeah, and my hot take is that Lenin Sosa finishes the year with 25 or more home runs.
Ooh, I like it, because that's also my heater, because the guy just don't quit. I don't care that I have used it multiple times this season. I am going to continue to use it. Seems like an easy out. But that one's for all the haters, because I have been on Lenin Sosa since he came into the system. It seems like 30 years ago at this point. Feels like he has been in the minor leagues with the White Sox. But it's been a good hot minute that he's been in the same organization. And I have been on him since day one, and I continue to stay on him. And I'm even into this season, a lot of those same haters were hating on him into May and June of this year. And now people seem to be jumping on the boat. Obviously, there's still a couple haters in this chat. Whatever. I don't care. But Lenin Sosa is going to be my guy. I'm sticking to my guns on that, and I hope he sticks around. I don't want to see him get traded. I think he potentially could be a very good finishing piece on this ball club, even though he's here already. When we talk about finishing pieces, I'm thinking we get the big connecting pieces in the future here. And, you know, he will be what will be considered a hit finishing piece. So that was a lot of words for nothing. Word salad there. But, yeah, I'm going to stick with that one. Lenin Sosa, my hater. Hot take. I still feel like the Sox can get 60 wins. It's going to be tough, but I think they can get there.
What are they on pace for?
I think like 54 right now. I think. But I think they got 53 or 54. Although I don't know, this loss tonight might have. Either way, I don't know. I feel like they go on one more heater and they get to 60. And I'm stopping right at 60 though. No more. Unfortunately, they still have a 100 plus losses. I was hoping that we could get to 100 even or below, but I think they're going to be over 100 losses. So unfortunate.
Yeah, but I mean the improvement is massive. So, yeah, okay. They're on pace for 57.
57. Okay, I think they get to 60. I think they go on one more run and they get to 60.
Don't hate it.
62 would be nice just to get that nice even 100. If we get to 63 and they go, you know,
they've won 100 losses. Will Venables
99? I'll put it like this: if they can get to 60, 61, that's a 20 game improvement, 19 to 20 game improvement over last season. Will Venables got to be in the conversation for coach of the year.
I agree. He won't get it because.
He won't, but he's got to be in the conversation.
Over 100 loss team, but yeah, I agree. I've been very impressed by him.
Yeah, yeah. If you have any question about whether or not he was the right coach, I think your questions have been answered. So,
agree.
All right, man. Unless you have anything else, I think we'll call it, bro.
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, in that case, again, as always, I just want to give a huge shout out to our chat. You guys are awesome. You guys keep us on our toes for sure. And we appreciate all of you. And I might give some of you a hard time, but that's just my nature. And, you know, if you're going to throw it out there, I'm going to throw it back. But don't take it the wrong way. We enjoy you being here. We hope you come back. We hope you check in with us. We get a lot of our regulars like to come in here, and I'll give it to them too. And you'll see that as time goes on. But again, much appreciated. If you appreciate any content that we are putting out to you live on a weekly basis or any of our other live shows, as always, when you see us here on the YouTubes, super chats are open. Feel free to donate so that we're not just sitting here. I'm not sitting here smoking cigarettes and growing hemorrhoids for nothing, but, I'll be here either way every week in and week out. But we appreciate them. If you guys can't do that or don't feel like you want to do that, by all means, show them some love and some support by hitting that like button, break your keyboard, smash it, subscribe, thumbs up, all that good stuff. We really appreciate that. It helps us with the algorithms and whatnot. You can find us here every Wednesday at 8 p.m. You can also check out our other shows, the Future Sox podcast with James and Ian, as well as Future Sox Roundup with Elijah and AAA Jeff Cohen, and of course our good buddy Dylan Notsies. And if you guys want to check out our exclusive content or any of our written content, you can find that at futuresox.net. as well as some of our exclusive content hidden behind the paywall for a $2 a month Patreon donation, which would be much appreciated as well. Until next time, oh, I'm sorry, I'm skipping the best part. That guy over there. This guy, yeah, the guy sitting there with the ball cap on and the wings sticking out. The young buck who just scored himself a live on-air radio position down in Peoria. You guys check that out when you get a chance. Jacob Thome will be doing the afternoon show down there in the very near future. I think it's the afternoon show, right?
Well, I'm not sure yet. Okay, I'll figure it out tomorrow. I'll have an answer next week.
Be on the lookout for Jacob Thome on the air, on the Peoria airwaves, doing his own sports talk radio.
Or if you'd like to follow along, D2 Soccer. Starts Friday.
There you go.
I'm just kidding. You don't. But he Friday's like an inner squad scrimmage.
No. Yeah, D2 inner squad scrimmages. It sounds like exciting stuff. But yeah, he's Jacob Thome. You can find him on X at jthome21. I am Danny Miller. You can find me at Danny Miller FS on X/Twitter. Until next time, go White Sox.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.